my mother and father had moved to Portland. They'd been married in a small town, Bremerton, Washington, which had shipyards during World War I, had been active, and so they both had been working there when they met. And so my aunt, my mother's sister and my father's sister and my mom had all been rooming together, just sort of accidentally. And that's how my dad and mom met. So they married there and then moved to Portland. Not sure when. My sister was 3 years older, and I'm quite sure she was born in Portland. Anyway.
What profession was your father in?
Well, he had a degree in electrical engineering from Washington State College, and I assume that's what he was working at the shipyards. But by the time I became aware, somehow he got caught up in the brand new things of radio. And because he had this engineering background, he could understand it much better. And so somehow or the other, he started a radio store, which selling and repairing radios. And so it was busy. The Depression hit. I wasn't very old, I guess, when the Depression hit. And so he was, by the time I could remember much about his work, it was, he was working and then going back to his shop after dinner every night. We didn't see much of him. But then when the Depression really came in, it clobbered his business. And also, he'd been, he apparently got himself insured very, what in those days was very comfortably. And apparently his health failed. And I was never quite clear what was going on, but it was that I think that they made him quit working. And also apparently they lost their home. They couldn't keep paying for mortgage on their home in Portland. That's the first place I can remember living. So when I was 7 or so, we moved out to the country where they found a place that was much cheaper. And but for us kids, it was hugely more attractive. It was a acre of land that spanned a little creek and then went up the incline and to a level place where a house was, and then there was a room for a garden and a barn above that. And so that's where I got most of my memories of childhood. And right behind our house, between us and the city of Portland, was a 90-acre virgin fir forest that just really created such a barrier and so much fun that, you know, the gate right behind our house went right out into that woods, we called it, and we roamed through all that and played in the creek and built things, and it was just terrific. I'm sure all that country-ish roaming, freedom, exploring, etc., much has shaped my personality. Anyway, it was a big part of our lives. Then when I was dying in 34, my father...
Wait, could you pause 1 second?
Yeah.
So, okay, 1934.
My father caught a cold, and in a few days it got much worse. Kids weren't getting the exact story or something, but we knew he was And an ambulance came and picked him up and took him to the hospital because they figured he needed care there. And so I, as they were carrying him out, I said, "So long, Dad." And he said goodbye. Anyway, that during the night sometime he died. So all that was very abrupt for us kids. So right in the middle of the Depression, it didn't really get over it until World War II got going, I think, or something anyway, but all the years we lived on there, my mom just was eking out on the insurance money, but I don't know how she did it, but so we were all acutely aware of that we were very hard up, but it didn't make it miserable or dreary. My mom's sense of humor was always there, so anyway, we weren't worried, we just knew we didn't have any money. So anyway, I finished grade school, and the little tiny district we lived in.
But when did you finish grade school?
Just after the 8th grade.
Okay, what year was that, do you remember? Yeah. How many years was that after your father died?
I'm trying to guess. I think it might have been 19.
Oh, but why don't we stop at 1938 and talk about your Model T?
Oh, well. We were looking for odd jobs around, and if you could get them, like helping somebody dig ditches or heavy labor, because by the time I was in my early teens, I was strong and able, so we could really get good money out, 25 cents an hour. and we also got paper routes that we delivered on our bikes around the country. So we were trying to earn money to help. What did you ask me?
The Model T Ford.
Oh, yeah. We also, roamed around in the adventures of all that forest land and such, but right on the edge of it was this orchard land that had been abandoned or something like this, and a bonnet was abandoned, and sitting in this barn, so it was sheltered from the rain and weather, was this glorious old car. It had a brass radiator, and windshield went straight up, and when somebody was sitting in the seat, driver's seat, their head was about 2 feet higher than someone standing next to them. That's how sort of high the seat was. So it was a 1916 Model T Ford, and it hadn't been used for years, and the back, it was a touring car with the back seat had been torn off, so the sort of lumber and such that made up the frame of the car was sort of sitting there bare behind the front seat, but I just fell in love with that car. So we found the owner, and he said, all right, he'd give it to me for $8 or $10 or something like that. Was that it? I think so. But that's like 40 hours of labor working. But I just bought it. My mom, didn't object at all. It was such an interesting thing. And so we towed it home, and I can't remember how we towed it home. Pushed it, but it didn't have the tires that worked. So. Anyway, for the next year or so, I was traipsing all over the country on my bike off after delivering the papers and such, going to J. junkyards and trying to find the tires for it. It would work secondhand, this and that. And finally, I got enough nerve to get it started. It didn't have a starter. 1916 was the first year that electric starters were optional on the Model T Fords, but mine didn't have one. And so the only way that it ran was that around the edge of the flywheel were horseshoe magnets. They were all sort of V magnets instead of horseshoe. And they were all riveted and bolted to the edge of the flywheel. And as they spun, they went by some coil sitting there. That was the way it generated the electricity that could be used for running the spark function. So, and also for the lights, because it had, one of the early years they had electric lights. Electric lights were on the two front headlights. But it's, in case you were going to park someplace, there were little oil lamps, one on each side of the windshield, sitting up kind of high. That was really cute. When we finally got it running, one of the kicks was the faster your engine ran, the brighter the headlights got. So if you came up to a sort of an intersection and wanted to see what the sign says, you'd stop it. You put it in neutral and gun the engine so you could see enough bright lights to see the sign. Anyway, in fixing it, I finally took it all apart, the engine. There was a garage a mile or so from our house that was a repair garage and all. It was owned and run by two brothers. And of course, everybody in the community knew that we were the semi-orphans, etc. But they were really nice. So when they found out how earnest I was about it, we had an arrangement that I could come up and say, I've got to take off, and, try to get the piston rings off of this thing. And they'd tell me how to do it, and they'd show me the right tool, then they'd loan it to me so I could ride home and do the fixing. And then the agreement was I'd bring it right back, so I'd have to make a 2 or 3 mile round trip on my bike to do that. But it was just very fortunate that have that much support, so I had it all rebuilt. It was just a big part of my young life, the adventure that. Our little district didn't have its own high school, so we had our choice of going into Portland. We could pick any high school or going out farther to an outlying country town, and I chose to go into Portland. And but not knowing, only my small graduating class of only a few of them went to that school. And so I was sort of in a sea of strangers, and it seemed like everybody was much more socially aware than I was.
Why did you choose to go to that one?
I don't remember. Any of them would have been going to a strange place. I don't remember.
Okay.
But it presented problems in getting to it because they didn't run school buses out in the country or anything, so you'd have to walk a mile and a half or something like that to the city limits where the street cars or buses would run if we wanted to take a bus. Or we could hitchhike. My sister and I went together for a while. But she got a scholarship to a very special school, so she was not often there with me. And so then the neighbor we had is the only man in the whole neighborhood that had been to college. And he ran a pharmacy. He was really a very good guy, and as he was leaving in the morning, the agreement was he'd beep his horn and his car. And he lived on the other side of the creek, on the other side of the road, so we were going to ride with him. We'd go running across the bridge, jump in his car, and he would drive us up to his store, which then still left about a mile and a half or something like that to school, and we'd walk from there. So that was a sort of a journey into school. And I'd get up at 5:30 to milk our cow and get into school finally at 10 after 8 or something like that for an 8:30 startup. And, 10 or 15 minutes later, the kids would come dragging in that lived only a matter of blocks away. Contrasted the difference of how much it took me to get there. And I was also just so bashful, just so amazing. One of the things that marks it is I keep remembering that we have lockers in the main halls, and so you're assigned a locker, and so you go to your locker and shift books around and such like that. But so people in the next lockers would intersect with you at sometimes. But I was too bashful to get acquainted with them. It's just unbelievable. And really was like that. I sat there and I kept realizing how different I was. And one time when I was a junior, I happened to look up and down the row next to me and just noticed that almost everybody had what we called sort of fancy shoes that were Oxford. They were low-cut shoes like everybody wears now. And I only had one pair of shoes to my name, and they were high-top working shoes, and I didn't see any other like that in there. And only then I looked more closely at mine, and then looked up and down the row and said, hey, none of them had any cow shit on them either. So mine were distinctive from two points of view. It never occurred to us to clean our shoes. anyway, when I guess I got good grades. And, so I can't remember much else.